morning. I came in last night and moved all the bookmarks backwards. We're going to go backwards again. So the Gemara, so page Lamed Bet, paragraph Tetvav. Gemara says, Amar lo Antoninus to Rebbe. Antoninus said to Rebbe, Gufu neshamay chalim yiftar atzman min adin. The body and the soul can each exempt themselves from din. Ketzad. How so? Gufu mer neshama chata. The body says the neshama sinned. Since it left me, I'm lying like a stone in the grave. The neshama says, "Guf chata, the body sinned." Since it left me, I'm floating in the air like a bird. Amar lo, em sholach hamashal. So he said, So Rebbe said, I'll give you a parable. L'ma davar domeh, l'melch chasar v'dam she'elo pardes na'ed. There was a king who had a nice orchard, Vayavo Bakurot Naod, had beautiful fruits, Hashibo Shnei Shomrim. He put two guards there, Echad Chiger Vechad Simei, one lame and one blind. Amar lo Chiger L'suma, the lame one said to the blind one, Bakurot Naod, Ani Ro'eva Pardes, I see beautiful fruits. Bo Var Kivenu Unvi'em Lochlam, come and give me a ride and we'll eat them. Rachav Chiger Agabe Suma, the lame man rode on the back of the blind man, Vigi'um Bachlum, they brought the fruits and they ate them. Le'amim Ba Ba'al Pardes. After some days, the owner of the orchard came. Marlem vakurot naot hechanhem. He said, "Where are the beautiful fruits?" Amar lo suma. The blind man said, "Klum yeshli enayim derot." What beautiful fruits? Could I see them? Amar lo chiger. Klum yeshli raglaim v'alechpem. The lame man said, "Could I have gone to get them?" Ma asa. What did he do? Hirkiv chiger agave suma. He put the lame man on the back of the blind man. V'danotam kechad and judged them as one. Af kadosh b'chum meviat neshama v'zorka baguf. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings in the neshama and throws it into the body. V'dano tam ke'echad and judges them as one. Shenemar yikra el hashamayim mi'al. He will call to the heavens above. V'el ha'aretz ladin imo and to the earth to judge with him. Yikra el shamayim mi'al zo neshama. He will call to the heavens above. This is the neshama. V'el ha'aretz ladin imo zehaguf. And to the earth to judge with him. This refers to the guf. So we've read this Gemara before and we explained it, as most commentaries do, and as the context of the Gemara suggests, as referring to Tchiyas HaMeisim. However, there is an alternative way of learning this Gemara. That's it. We're finished with this for today. There's a Rishon meaning the early generations like the Rambam and the Ramban and so on. So the Sefer called Ma'areches HaElokus. And we don't know who wrote it. We know it's a Rishon. We don't know who wrote it. There's several theories. One is, we've mentioned here before, the Rama, not the Rama in Shulchan Aruch, but the Rama, Rav Meir Halevi Abulafia, and Rav Meir Halevi Abulafia, who lived in Spain. And some believe that the Ma'areches HaElokus was his father, Rav Todrus Halevi. Okay, so that's one. And in that case, it would have been written in the late 1100s or very early 1200s. Some believe that the author's name was Rabbeinu Peretz. And there are two Rabbeinu Peretzes that we know of who could have been the authors. One was someone a little later in the 1300s, Rabbeinu Peretz HaKohen, who was the author of the Rivash, who we've mentioned before, the Rebbe of the Rivash, rather, we've mentioned before. The Rivash is Yitzchak Bar Sheshes. However, the Rivash himself writes in one of his tshuvos that his Rebbe did not know Kabbalah. And this is in large part a Kabbalah Sefer, and therefore it's considered less likely that that's the Rabbeinu Peretz who might have written the Sefer. The other Rabbeinu Peretz that we know about is a student of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is a grandson of Rashi, and he had a student of Rabbeinu Peretz. We have Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, commentary on Gemara, and so he's another candidate to have written this Sefer, in which case it probably would have been written also in the late 1100s. Okay. So that's the timing of this Sefer, roughly, and he writes as follows in Mareches Elokus Perik Yud. He's talking about something else, and he says, Mikan yitbonein hamaskil ahavat haneshama baguf. From here, from what I've been talking about, a thinking person will see the love of the neshama for the guf, and the pain the neshama has when it leaves the guf, because the neshama knows that it cannot earn reward without the body. The body and the soul being together is the completion of the body, of the body and the soul. If they both merit, they will exist forever. Moshe's karti ban shei amala b'tam, as I mentioned before in chapter 8. Aval kasher lo yizku, but if they don't merit, az ein zivugam ole yafeh, then their marriage, so to speak, doesn't work out. Their pairing, literally a zivug, is a pairing. V'tiparei da nefesh minak v'yad, the soul will leave the body. V'idonu shnehem k'inyana mashal shizkiru minak higer v'asuma, and they will be judged like the parable about the lame man and the blind man. The neshama is like the lame person who has no power without his body. The lame man can't go anywhere. And the body is like the blind person who has no eyes to lead him, no neshama to lead him. Perhaps this mashal hints, the mashal of the blind man and the lame man, hints to their judgment, v'inyan tzadik v'ralo, which is the question of tzadik v'ralo, tzadikim who have bad lives. Why is that? And it says in a note, haga im ki ulai hara'a sheyesh lo ata af ki tzadiku b'sivat avonot asher asa b'mei kedem b'mei nura v'kasher v'chulei. Because maybe what's the bad things that are happening to him now are because of punishments that he did in his youth. Kasher zachar v'tam, as we mentioned before, kikiyum neshama ra'ui hu mash'eino murkav v'hu shekol pashut she'en lo harkava v'eino nifsad. V'chein titatzreif v'titgalgel ad asher tinsa makom l'ashem liyot la ben zug ra'ui likiyum shnehem. The neshama is the word pashut versus murkav. Murkav means compound. Pashut means, I guess, unitary, we use it to mean simple, but it's simple in the sense of not being a compound structure. And as in the neshama is just some kind of existence.
Okay.
And therefore it will have to be purified and titgalgel, and it will come back in Gilgulim, in other lives, until it finds a fitting partner so that they can both exist together. Ki ein hamida rak pamayim b'shalosh, and this will only happen two or three times. Balarba'a lo yishivena, a fourth time it won't come back. That's a paraphrase of a pasuk. Shlosha pishei Yisrael balarba'a lo yishivena. Of course, it's a pasuk. Okay, and we're not sure whether in the end it will be cleansed, or maybe it won't be cleansed and it will be judged forever, or maybe it will find on whatever level it's on after these three Gilgulim coming back three times, it will just stay on whatever level it's on until the time of Tchiyas HaMesim. Baruch HaYodea, and blessed is the one who knows, meaning God. God knows.
Okay. What is the pasuk?
Pasuk is Al Shlosha Pishei Yisrael, on three sins of Yisrael, Val Arba'a Lo Shivena. The pshat of the pasuk is that God is telling the Navi, I gave the Jewish people three chances and not a fourth. There's a whole series of psukim like that. About different nations. Yeah, Hashem, I give this nation three chances. Right. Okay. I was afraid you were going to ask me that. Either Yeshaya or Amos. I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember.
Okay.
So, according to the Mareches HaElokus, Our Gemara is hinting at the concept of Gilgulei Neshamos, of Neshamos coming back in future lives. Where is it hinted to in our Gemara? He doesn't say. He just says, maybe it's hinted to in our Gemara. So I discussed this on Sunday by email with my Rebbe, Rav Tzuriel, and he said, perhaps, he also said, I don't have the Sefer in front of me. So it's all from memory. But he said that the Gemara, we read the Gemara, I emphasized the word, Meviyat Neshama Vezorka Baguf. He brings the Neshama and he throws it into the body, which suggests a haphazard kind of thing, or maybe almost an angry thing. So perhaps the use of that strange word is where the Ma'areches HaLukus saw a hint to Neshamos being, doesn't say it's neatly placed in the body. Subsequently, I found in Medrash Rabbah, Brachos Rabbah, Parsha Yudalid, when the Pasuk is talking about the creation of man, the Medrash also uses the word, the Neshama being Zorka, being thrown, Zarak, I think it says Zarak, and the Neshama being thrown, and it draws a contrast between the future when the Neshama will be neatly placed in the body. So you see that the word Zorka in the context of Neshama seems to mean not the ultimate neat placement of the Neshama in the body, but some kind of preliminary, less permanent thing. So that would support that interpretation of what the hint is.
Can we draw any meaning from two or three? I always heard that phrase, two or three. Why not up to three times?
What do you mean?
I mean, we could say the Neshama comes up to three times. Two or three, I just wonder why it says that, said that way.
It doesn't have to be three times. We'll talk about this. Okay. This Gemara is an excuse for us to talk about what you've asked lots of questions about so far in the shiur we've had so far, which is the subject of Gilgulei Neshamos. So we will do that. But first, really, I had a question about whether I should do that. And as we mentioned in our introduction to Ein Yaakov, the Ein Yaakov was written by Rav Yaakov Ibn Chaviv, who lived in the time of the expulsion of Jews from Spain. He did not finish the work, and the work was finished by his son, Rav Levi Ibn Chaviv, known as the Maharal Bach, Moreno Harav Levi Ibn Chaviv. The Ralbach, as he's also known, it's easier to say than Maharalbach. The Ralbach also wrote Halachic Shilas and Shuvos, responsa letters, and in one of them, Simon Ayin Hay, it's titled Shiloli Drosh Barabim Vifnei Amei Haaretz B'Dvarim Shem Kiv Shino Sholam, not to preach in public and in front of Amei Haaretz things which are secrets of the world. It says Va'ala Shaniflaita al Elua Dorshim Barabim Ufne Me Arts Bisfirot Ubigilgul Ushard Vimachim Sritra regarding that which you wondered about, people who speak in public about Sphiros and Gilgulim and other secrets of the Torah. Gambe Nayi Pale Hafle Vafela, to me also it's wondrous. Vatidim Hem Litin Todin, and they will give judgment on this. I already complained about this in a pamphlet I wrote to you some time ago. And I brought proof from Rishonim, who were the true Chachamim, and about the secrets of the world. Halohim Haramban Zal, Venosei Kelav, the Ramban. The Lodi Brubahem, Kim Veremez, Ramban, only hints to these kinds of things. Veremez Vechida, with hints and riddles, as we'll see. Kahi Darkam Shalvayim Acharav, Yidei Terav, and Asrei Tudah. This is the way of those who come after them, who know the Torah and guard its destiny. So he would not approve. And therefore the shiur is over. Have a good day. However, others who came after him, the sefer called Emek HaMelech, and he quotes the Ralbach in Hakdama Shnia Perek Shlishi, the third chapter. He quotes the Ralbach, and he argues with him, and he says that was all good before printing, but the Zohar has been printed, Kabbalah Sfarim have been printed, and he lived in the 1600s. Okay, early 1600s, I think. Okay. He says, these Sfarim have been printed, and they were printed with haskamos, with approval of great rabbis, and now this is out there, and there's no longer any reason to keep it a secret, like the Ralbach is suggesting. And to the contrary, why not bring merit to the Jewish people and teach about these things? Nishmas Chaim, which we've quoted many times and we'll quote many times, Sefer about in the 1600s about the nature of the soul for Rav Menashe ben Israel. He writes in Mama Ravi, chapter 7, V'anachnu hayom b'acharit hayamim. Well, let me just go back further. He starts out, Inyan ha-yibum, the subject of yibum, which we will talk about at greater length. Usod gadol misodot ha-Torah, it's a great secret. V'ramban zal tacht chidot melitzot pe'elim v'sirato. The Ramban, in secrets, in riddles and hints, concealed the secret. But Daniel said that as we get closer to the end of time, knowledge will increase. And we are now in the end of time. This is in the 1600s. About which Nevi'im prophesied. Therefore, it's no secret if these things are becoming more clarified and understanding, people will understand. I know, wise reader, that I do not have Torah or understanding, to know these great lofty things clearly. I am relying on the Rishonim. I will carry their names on my lips. And I know that I will not be ashamed. Because my intention is for heaven and not to show off my wisdom. I didn't come to show off my wisdom. Just to do a complete job as best as I can. I ask forgiveness from Hashem if I make mistakes. My goal is for him. He will lead me in his kindness on my path. And Hashem Elohim will help me and fulfill my desire. So he says, I'm going to talk about it, but with apologies and a prayer for success and relying on the words of the Rishonim, not making this stuff up myself. So, and he then goes on to talk about it, and we will come back to that. And lastly, the Levush, also 1600s. The one of the great poskim also wrote Sefer on Chumash and a Sefer on. There's a commentary on Chumash from a early Mekubal called the Rav Menachem Rikanti, who lived in Italy in the 1300s. And the Levush wrote a commentary on that Sefer, and he writes in that commentary, Vadiburbo Sakanatsuma, speaking about this subject of Gugulim is a great danger. Kibirov Dvarim Lo Yechdal Pesha. The more one says, the less likely it is, it's impossible to avoid sin. Hashem Yibarach Brachamav Yichaper Ba'adenu. Hashem, blessed Hashem in His mercy, atone for us, Mishkiyot Yatzilenu, and save us from mistakes. Kil Tovak Havanatenu Vatel Hirurei Adiyotam Zimot Rechim. Because our intention is good to nullify incorrect understandings. So, with those disclaimers and introductions, we will follow their lead and stick closely to the words of the Rishonim, not speculate. We'll hold questions until the end, and most likely I will tell you either we'll talk about it tomorrow or I don't know the answer. That is sort of an introduction. Now, we also need a little bit of a historical introduction to this subject. There's another tshuva of the Ralbach. That other one was Simon Ayin Hey. This one is Simon Chet. He says, "V'inyan ha'sheila ha'shlishit shalta." Regarding your third question, "Imemunat gilgulu davar hechrachi lamin bo akol." Is it necessary to believe in gilgulim? Gami mutar lidrosh bo rabim, and is it permitted to talk about it in public? Daki be'avonati adayin lo zechiti l'chokhma azot. Says, I don't merit this wisdom. Yan ki lo nitan l'adam reshut lavin v'me'atzma. A person cannot understand it on his own. He needs. It's Kabbalah. It's received. You need a teacher to teach it to you. Okay. So he says that I've looked in Sfarim, Bariti, Ubinoti, Besfarim, Umatzati, Chachamim, Chachamenu Zal, Utam Shayu Achrei Chatimat Tzemud Yamim Ravim, Nechlekul Shtei Kitot. The sages, Chazal, who are after the completion of the Gemara, are divided into two groups. Hakata Chata Chokrim, there are the philosophers, Binanei Ikarei Emunot, those who research the fundamentals of our beliefs, Kefi Sichlam, based Levad, based on their intellect alone, Umitaskim B'Chokmat HaChitzonot, and they study outside wisdoms, V'Livam Shel Eile Kashela Amin Emunazot. They find it difficult to believe this in Gilgulim. Yan Ki Kefi HaSeichel Yesh La Kushiyot Shelo Hisig Sichlam Yashvam, because there are many logical questions, and we will discuss those. But there is another group, Gdola Me'od Mechachmei Yisrael Hamamim, who very large group who believe, V'kulam Katvu Aleha Ki Emunah Amitit V'ikar Meikar HaTorah, and they wrote that it is true and a fundamental of the Torah, L'Teretz Kushat Tzadik V'Ralo, because it answers the question of Tzadik V'Ralo, as we'll discuss that also, V'kulanu Anachnu Chuyavim L'Shma Dvarim Eilu Acharim, and we are obligated to listen to their words, Lamin Amunazot, and to believe this, without any doubt. And then he discusses again the question of discussing it in public and goes into one of the hints that the Ramban brings, which we'll come back to tomorrow. What he's referring to, the philosophers and so on, two things. One, the Gemara and the standard Midrashim, Medrash Rava, Medrash Tanchuma, so on, make no explicit mention of this concept. It's not found at all. Okay. As we'll see, there are hints in the Gemara, according to some Mefarshim, okay, but it's certainly not mentioned. It is mentioned in the Zohar. However, the Zohar was not known. The Zohar was lost. Was only discovered in the early 1200s, and published. So, the Gedolim before that were not aware of it. There are hints in the Ramban. The most Mefarshim, most commentaries in Ramban think he never saw the Zohar, but he had a tradition about the same things, and he writes. He writes things that parallel the Zohar. However, it was not known. So that's one historical point. The other historical point is the great battle about the relationship of Judaism to Greek philosophy. And many, many Sfarim talk about Gilgulim, mention the Greek philosopher Pythagoras, same person, I believe, that the Pythagorean theorem a squared plus b squared equals c squared for finding the sides of a triangle. I think it's the same Pythagoras. I forgot to research that. But he talks about Trias HaMesim, about Gilgul. He talks about Gilgulim. And so there's a big debate in the Gaonim and Rishonim who address this. Did he get it from us or did we get it from him? Is this a Jewish belief or is it not a Jewish belief? So today, for the rest of today, we're going to focus on the opinions of the Gaonim and Rishonim who did not believe in Gilgulim and their reasons and we're not going to answer their questions. Nobody's going to go home a heretic. We're just going to visit their opinions and their questions, and then tomorrow we'll talk about the opinions of those who do believe in Gilgulim and answer some of their questions. So the first one is Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon lived in Bavel in the 900s. And he says in Emunot V'Deot, the end of Mamar Shishi, he's talking about the nature of the soul. And a lot of this discussion does revolve around what is the nature of the soul. And he brings the opinions of other groups about the nature of the soul. And he says, Avalomar Shanashim Mishnikar Yudim, there are people who are called Jews. Some say he writes they're called Jews because he's referring to the Karaites, which are a sect that did not believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, and they called themselves Jews. Okay. Matzatim Omrim Vishanut, they talk about Hishanut, which means comes from the root sheni, second time. In other words, Gilgulim. V'korim otaha taka, they also call it movement from one place to another. He doesn't use the word Gilgul, but that's what he's talking about. V'inyano etzlam shiruach Ruvain tashuv el Shimon. Their idea is that the spirit of Ruvain returns to Shimon, v'charkin b'levi, and then to Levi, v'charkin b'Yehuda, and then to Yehuda. V'yeshmem rabim shomrim yesh pramim shtia ruach adam v'veima. And so many of them think that sometime man's spirit comes back in an animal, ruach beima v'adam, or animal spirit comes back in man. Dvarim rabim izeh shigaon v'ribuv, and many crazy mixed up things like that.
Okay. So he's rejecting Gilgulim altogether.
He's rejecting the idea that the spirit of Reuven comes back in Shimon, and then comes back in Levi, and then comes back in Yehuda. He seems to be rejecting the concept altogether, and he says that I looked into this, and there are four mistakes that lead people to believe this, to believe in Gilgulim. Okay. The first one is that their understanding of the neshama is based on non-Jewish sources. And they think that the neshama always existed, and it's just roaming around looking for a home. And therefore, it will jump from Reuven to Shimon to Levi. One of the things that we will see is that some of the early sources that rejected the concept of Gilgulim were not thinking of it in the concept that we understand it, and later Rishonim and Achronim understand it, and that Kubalim understand it, which is that it's for a reason. What he's seems to be talking about is random, like the neshama is looking for a home. The neshama is some kind of being that always existed, and therefore it has to jump around looking for a home in a person randomly, without reason. Okay, and he's rejecting that. The concept of Gilgul as a punishment or a tikkun, he doesn't address that at all. Seems like it never occurred to him. He wasn't familiar with that concept. And as I mentioned, since he wasn't aware of the Zohar, that's not surprising. Okay? So that's the first mistake. The second mistake is that people see, you meet someone and you say, he's as meek as a sheep. He's as angry as a bull. And therefore you assume that his neshama previously resided in a sheep or in a bull. And Rav Sadia Gaon says, that's ridiculous. Actually, he says, V'zeh yirachemcha Elokim moreh arov sichutam. This, God have mercy, illustrates their foolishness. They think that the body is so lacking in form that if the soul of a sheep comes into it, the body will start looking like a sheep, will start acting like a sheep. Or if the soul of a person goes into a sheep, the sheep will start acting like a person. Okay? That's ridiculous. Okay. Third, he says, and this is more in the nature of the arguments that we'll see, he says, people say, how could bad things happen to babies? They haven't sinned. It must be that their souls were here previously, and this is the consequence. And he says whoever says that didn't read the rest of my book that came before, because I explained why that happens. Hashem makes people suffer in Olam Hazeh to increase their reward in Olam Haba. Period. That's the reason, according to Rasadigon, that is sufficient explanation for why young people suffer. Okay? That's a different section of his book. That's not for now. He does he talks but he hasn't. No, he didn't say anything about punishment for sins. The suffering itself is a reason to receive reward in Olam Haba. That's what he holds. Okay? Has nothing to do with sin. Nothing. And fourth, he says, people bring psukim as proof for Gilgulim, such as Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm not only speaking to the people in Parshas Nitzavim, Devarim Chavtet, Yodalad, I'm not only talking to those who are here today, I'm talking to those who aren't here today, which some people interpret to mean those who aren't here today are inside those who are here today. And he says just the opposite. The pasuk clearly means there are those who are here today and there are those who are not here today. It proves exactly the opposite. And he brings other psukim that people bring as proofs, and he rejects them. That is... So he's referring to people who well, what implies? So he implies you came in late, but he implies he's talking about people who think that the soul is looking for a place to live first in Reuven, then in Shimon, then in Levi. Right. Okay. This is Emunos Deos of Rasadigon with the commentary of your relative from David Cohen, the Nazir. And it was very helpful in preparing this year. The next source is the Raivad. Now, there are three Raivads among the Rishonim. The first Raivad, who was a philosopher. The second Raivad, who was a Mekubal. And the third Raivad, known as the Raivad Baal HaSagos, who wrote the glosses on the Rambam. We've quoted before. So this is the first Raivad. He lived in Spain from around 1110 to around 1180. And he says that this concept of Gilgulim, it can't be right, because the person's born with a soul. If you'll say that another soul comes into him after he's born, and there is such a concept, then he's going to have two souls. Whoever heard of a person with two souls? So that can't be right. And if you'll say that he's born with a soul that's been here before, says that can't be right either, because the soul matches the person, and so there would have to be two people who are exactly alike, one who lived before and one who lived now. And that's not logical either, that there would be two people who are exactly alike so that the soul would exactly fit. So those are his reasons for rejecting the concept of Gilgul. Another possible source. It's not 100% clear here. The Radak, the Tanakh commentator, Radak of David Kimchi, in his commentary on Tehillim, he brings the pasuk that we say every Rosh Chodesh in Baruch Hinafshi. Tishlach ruchacha yivareon, you will send your spirit, they will be created. He says that some say this is an allusion to Gilgulim, and he rejects that. It's not 100% clear if he's rejecting the concept of Gilgulim or he's rejecting the interpretation of the pasuk. So we'll mention that as a possible source, not 100% clear. One of the greatest poskim of the Rishonim was the Rashba, who wrote thousands of tshuvos, lived in the 1300s in Spain. And among his tshuvos, there are letters written to him. Now, the Rashba was a very active player in the battle against philosophy. I mentioned there was a big debate about the relationship of Judaism to philosophy, and this debate became very heated after the Rambam published Mor Nevuchim. And there were haramim, excommunications, flying back and forth. And the scholars of Spain issued a cherem against the study of philosophy. And there's a long letter from the scholars of Provence in southern Spain, and in particular someone named Rav Yedaya Pnini HaBedarsi, who lived from about 1270 to about 1340. And he writes a long letter to the Rashba explaining the importance of philosophy and why it is absolutely necessary to study philosophy. And one of the benefits of philosophy is that it will drive out of people's minds this idea of Gilgulim. He says that Gilgulim is the idea that the soul returns. Literally, the word means to roll. So it rolls over from one person to another person. And some even think from one species to another species. So a horse could come back as a dog or as a person and so on. And he says that, so they think that, you know, Reuven will die and his soul will come back as Shimon. And this is clearly wrong. Philosophy disproves this, that he says, first of all, it wouldn't be fair. Because if I'm born with a neshama that sinned a lot, then I start a handicapped. If I'm born with a neshama that did lots of mitzvos, then I'm born with an advantage. It wouldn't be fair. Furthermore, so that's an interesting question. Right. He seems to be it's not fair to the person. He's not looking at it from the perspective of the neshama. He's looking at it from the perspective of the person that the neshama is in, attributing a separate importance to the person. And that's a very good point. Okay. He says, moreover, if I don't believe in Gilgulim and bad things happen to me, I will do tshuva. If I do believe in Gilgulim and bad things happen to me, I'll say, no need to do tshuva. It's that other guy's fault. Okay? So why should I? And so he's not seeing it that way. He's not abandoning the concept. He wasn't familiar with the concept of Gilgulim as we know it. Okay.
Circular logic.
No. You think it's circular logic because you're looking at it from the perspective that we understand it today as the neshama is primary, the neshama comes back to be punished or to be repaired or to find its fulfillment, and therefore you're looking at it from the perspective of fairness to the neshama. But that's only because of what you've already learned. You need to put that out of your mind and look at it from... He's looking at it from the perspective of the body. It's not fair to give the body that the person should be born with an advantage or a disadvantage based on where his neshama was before. And furthermore, it's a disincentive to work hard and to do tshuva. Okay? So that is
that because sometimes
no, a philosopher addressed Mazel? No, no, he doesn't.
Okay.
I understand. Okay. Finally, Sefer HaIkarim, one of the major. Rav Kook considered this one of the five major svarim of Jewish beliefs that a person is required to know. Okay. And he mentions the concept of Gulgulim and says, Avalein Zenachon, it's not right. Because his argument is, I understand that God created the world in such a way that the neshama cannot receive its ultimate reward until it's been in a body. Fine. It's been in a body once. What more? What do you want from it? Why should it be in a body again? Again, this concept that way we're going to talk about it and we understand it today of this, why it comes back into another body, doesn't seem to have been familiar with that. He just says, God created a world where a neshama has to come into a body in order to reach its ultimate reward. Fine. Done. It came into the body. Okay. There are others. Those are the some of the major opinions of those who rejected the concept and their reasons. We'll come back tomorrow and answer some of their questions and discuss those who do believe. Just to give you a taste, other things we'll talk about. A surprising halachic nafkamina that comes out of whether or not you believe in Gilgulim. Tshuva Nod Yehuda, who paskins a halacha based on the concept of Gilgulim. Okay. Who has Gilgulim? Tzadikim? Rishayim? Who is it? Is it Tzadikim? Is it Rishayim? What about women? Who comes back? Do women come back in Gilgulim? And why or why not? How many times? These are just some things we're going to discuss in the next day or two. Okay, how many times and why? What's the significance of that number? Okay, the question that several of you have asked, and what's going to happen at Tchias HaMeisim? Which body and soul will be matched up again? Can a person know whether he's a Gilgul and why he's a Gilgul? So those are some of the subjects that we will talk about tomorrow, and if necessary, probably all the day after. Have a good day.